Welcome back to West Bev. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Ariel.
And this is your Beverly Hills 90210 podcast, where we break down every episode of the 10-season show. Today, we're talking about Season 9, Episode 10, Marathon Man.
Mary, what happened this week?
The pee pad hosts a dance marathon for AIDS awareness, and Noah is so fully absorbed in the preparations, Donna's pretty sure he forgot her birthday. But he's actually also planning a surprise party with Gina's help, if you consider getting the wrong cake and airing 24 years worth of grievances about the birthday girl helpful. Steve pledges a $1,000 donation for the Beverly Beat to sponsor a pair of dancers, not realizing it's an hourly rate for a 12-hour marathon. Instead of admitting his mistake like Janet suggests, he schemes his way into an even stupider situation involving the newlywed Munces. Everything works out, though, because it's Steve, and of course it does. Kelly plans to go to the dance marathon with Matt, not Mark, but then lets Dylan whisk her away to Mexico for brunch and dinner and Mayan statues full of sneaky drugs. Kelly decides that she'd rather be with Matt, but not before Gina exposes her for lying about what she's been up to and where and with whom. When Dylan runs out of drugs, he repeats his Mexico routine with Gina, who does not mind being a substitute unwitting drug courier. But due to a break-in at Now Wear This, the second sneaky drug statue is placed out of Dylan's reach and surrounded by cops. Unable to manipulate Kelly into getting into the store, he once again settles for Gina. Donna refuses to believe Sonia could have committed the break-in at the store, despite Sonia's group of friends and previous behavior. Donna's right, because she's Donna, and of course she is. She's the best judge of character, except when it comes to Gina, I guess.
I just want to jump right into this, honestly. Okay, so we really liked the cold opens last week. I feel like they put effort into last week's cold open, and then this week we're just like, we don't have time, just go with it.
Yeah, because like they initially start off just talking about 12 hours of dancing, and I'm like, what are they talking about? Like, no preamble, no setup, just Matt's bad at dancing still, but he's been taking lessons. Gina's gonna go with David to this thing, but wants to go with Dylan. And then they immediately pivot and talk about that they hired a security guard for the store.
Yeah, named Stuart.
Oh, my God.
Another Stuart after so long. But, okay, when Kelly says, oh, Matt only steps on my feet every other minute now, Donna just goes into mental math trying to figure out, like, exactly how bad this is going to be for Kelly. And nobody pays attention. She's just, like, off screen talking so that we can focus on Gina being like, yeah, I'm going with David, which I had no idea what her behavior was here. I didn't realize this was to set up that she hadn't actually asked anybody yet.
Same. I literally thought it meant that she was going with David but wanted to go with Dylan. Like, that's all I thought it was. It was so strange.
I was like, are you acting embarrassed that you're going with David when he's Kelly's brother and Donna's ex three times over? Like, they don't care.
Exactly. And then, like, of course, to just kind of accentuate the point that Gina is not going with Dylan, Dylan's been lurking outside and overhears this entire conversation and then just asks Kelly to go to breakfast with him. And Kelly tries to push him off. She's like, it's the Christmas rush. I really can't do it. And could Gina be any more obvious? Because she's like, well, I could go. I'll go, Dylan. I'll go to breakfast with you. Like, what?
I loved every time Kelly doesn't work and Gina's just like, well, it is your store. I don't have to be here. But no, she's so desperate. And this is the first time in this episode that Gina pulls a brat attitude and she is just whiny for the entire episode. She's always whiny, but I feel like this was a very exaggerated week.
I agree. And like, you know, I guess this means that Kelly's like, oh, no, because Gina wants to. Like, now that makes me want to more. And so she goes off with Dylan. And in the store, when Gina and Donna turn back into the store, turns out they weren't robbed, but they actually find Sonia, the girl from last week, and some random boy just sleeping in the store.
I'm sorry. That actor looked like he was 40. Like, that guy had muscles.
Yeah. He looks like a Shane West lookalike.
Oh, I wish it was Shane West. Shane West is actively playing teenage boys at this point. He could have done it.
True.
And we have the classic like TV moment where Sony's trying to explain what was happening and Donna's like, look, don't explain it. I don't want to hear it. So we'll get the explanation later. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But then we cut to a private airstrip where Dylan has chartered a jet to go to Cabo. And Kelly is not even remotely suspicious by this. She's like, oh my God, this is so much fun. Let me just call work and tell them I'm actually skipping the entire day.
I do love, like, right when they're walking out of the airport onto the strip, Kelly's like, in case you haven't noticed, we're at an airport. it just made me laugh. And then it really actually for a moment seemed like Luke and Jenny were having fun because, you know, they're talking about getting real authentic huevos rancheros and you have to go to the actual ranchero. And then all of a sudden Kelly just looks giddy to be hopping on a private plane. And I'm like, man, I think this is just them having fun. You know, like, it was pretty cute.
I really loved the back and forth where she's like, we're getting breakfast on a jet. And Dylan's like, no, we're getting brunch.
Mm-hmm, obviously. Exactly.
Like, it was so cute. And then while the credits were rolling and there were no changes, I realized it actually makes me nervous that Dylan's acting normal because he has not been acting normal at all. And that's what we expect. That's what the show does. That's what we basically enjoy watching. So him like right. acting normal and I mean normal for Dylan.
Yeah.
And whisking her away for authentic huevos rancheros made me nervous.
Same. And yeah, then we get the credits. We get a lengthy B-roll, which we didn't have last episode, of Christmas time. You know, the whole town is all set up and we basically go back to the store and Donna didn't fire Sonia, but basically just makes her promise not to do that again. Like, Donna, sometimes you got to be harsh, baby. And she just yeah. would not.
Can we talk about how this 15-year-old girl does not need a key to Donna's store?
100%.
Yeah. No, she's like maybe working like 2 or 3 hours after school.
Yeah.
Especially if she's working to pay off $119. For a dress, like what, like she can only be working a couple hours after school because that's only like 20 hours worth of work at minimum wage in 1998 in California.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, why does she have a key? Especially like, and this is making assumptions, but especially knowing like the people that have come around when Sonia's there, you know, like that's just dangerous.
Yeah, well, and then we find out she only has one more week of working off her debt, so she's literally working here for 2 weeks. She's not opening yeah. and closing. She does not need the keys.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get this brief moment where we're reminded that Donna's birthday is Christmas. Kind of helpful because I did forget. I can't believe it. But Gina asks what Noah's doing, and apparently Noah's been acting like he forgot it's her birthday, and Donna doesn't want to bring it up, which is
yeah.
pretty upsetting to me, but we'll get past that. We'll talk about the birthday later. What happens here is that some girl comes in and threatens Sonia with a knife, because we still have the knife, so excited to use it, and it's over the guy from earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, she basically, like, claims, like, that guy, Tony, is hers, and if she doesn't lay off, she'll be in a body bag. In a body bag! She says it twice.
It's very, Karate Kid.
And also, I don't know if any of you have listened to the most recent Pod Meets World episode recap. It's very much, like, speaking of head off.
Stuart comes in, breaks it up by existing. I don't know. I still think if somebody pulls a knife, you don't just say, like, is everything okay here? You say, like, you need right. to leave the property.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And then but
then we get to go to Cabo, and it's so stereotypical. Like, we see – like, there's two scenes that kind of bookend another one, so we could maybe we could just stay on Cabo for a sec. But, like, they're basking in the sun for their brunch. It's a gorgeous place. Like, apparently Dylan comes here a lot because he knows the waiters. And they kind of start talking a little bit about, like, their relationship, which doesn't exist. But they're starting to talk about, like, where do we stand? But, you know, Dylan's still kind of evasive. But he wants to also understand the whole Matt situation. And basically just says he wants to have some fun. Like, he doesn't want anything serious. He just wants to have fun, which is so very Dylan. And again, like, that's the normal activity that you're speaking of. And so it's like, what, Dylan, why are you acting normal?
I love that he says he wants to take things slow, so he whisked her off to another country.
Right, exactly.
And then brings up the other guy she's dating.
Yeah, and then immediately after, they, like, leave brunch and take a picture with a donkey. They buy sombreros. And then some guy that Dylan knows gives him, like, this Mayan statue for fertility. And that felt very Iris McKay to me. You know, like, suddenly Dylan is into this kind of stuff. Like, maybe Iris wasn't crazy all along. But, of course, like, while Kelly's kind of browsing, Dylan says he's going to get her a surprise and goes off to see this other guy to get some drugs. And instead brings her back some horchata just to kind of, like, keep the ruse up, right?
And the actor that they got for this, like, drug purchase, I don't know where this man went to acting school, but all I could think of was the scene in the beginning of 22 Jump Street where they're going undercover for the drug bust or the illegal animal bust. And he's like, yeah, jefe, this is my friend, you know, whatever. But he's got that horrible accent, like totally just absolutely making a mockery of everything. And this guy is like, oh, you're here for my special Mexican medicine. I'm like, stop. Never speak again. Then it's a horrible handoff. Like, we need Sophie. Oh, my God. Yeah. I almost forgot her name already. we need Sophie to come teach this man how to do a handoff for drugs for money. Hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then he, like, goes back to Kelly and slips the drugs inside the statue and now is essentially getting Kelly to smuggle it back and be his mule because he claims, like, you don't have to, like, declare religious artifacts.
Yeah, he almost literally is just using these women as mules and telling them. Like, he's handing it to her saying, like, you don't have to declare this. Like,
yes.
Also, if he tells you he wants to take things slow and then takes you to another country and buys you a fertility goddess statue, that's not slow.
No, exactly.
Back in the U.S., we're at the Peach Pit where Steve and Janet and I guess Matt are having a business breakfast. And Steve is showing Matt a story that he bought for $2,000. And Matt's like, do not run this. You will immediately be sued. The only way I will let you run this is if I think you can pay me to defend you.
Mm-hmm.
And Janet throws in, respectable newspapers don't buy their stories. I love Steve's response of, of course not. That's why they're respectable.
It's just so frustrating to see what Steve has allowed this paper to become. Like, we made fun of it for its, like, circulation numbers and, like, amount of stories that Brandon could crank out. But now it's like, this really does suck. Like, it could have been a good thing.
I mean, I think there's a part later where Steve is like, say one word and I'll fire you. And Janet's like, oh, no, that's a threat.
Right?
But actually, it's like right after this because Noah comes over. Apparently, the dance marathon that we've been hearing about is an AIDS benefit that's happening at the P-Pad. And they need sponsors. So Steve puts down $1,000. And Matt is just like, $1,000? You're just throwing money left and right, aren't you?
Yep. And Steve's like, well, we gotta spend money to make money. And of course, like, then the next time we see Janet and Steve, which is after that additional Cabo scene, Janet's, like, definitely worried that Steve is spending way too much money. And this is where we learn that, no, it wasn't just $1,000. It was $1,000 an hour of dancing. So whoever they are sponsoring, the couple, as long as they stay on the dance floor, that clock is ticking and those dollars are coming in, right? Like, that's more money that they have to spend.
Yeah. So basically, Steve has spent $12,000 in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that Noah's running back and forth on top of planning this is he is actually technically kind of being involved in planning a surprise party for Donna. I think he really just came up with the idea and then told Gina to plan it.
Right.
And, you know, he comes over to her. He only wants to talk about this party. He's like, I've just been so busy and Gina is like, you need to listen to me for a second because somebody came into the store today and pulled a knife on us. First of all, they pulled a knife on Sonia, not you guys. I mean, you were there, but like, be clear. But then Noah runs away to go check on Donna and she's like, I'm fine. Thanks for asking.
I also like, sorry, he just ends up saying like, we can't afford this. I'm like, okay. Who's we? Who is we?
I actually wrote that down because it was like, that's actually kind of a nice reminder that he is invested in her business.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because at first I was like, we are not merging the budgets here. Like, yeah. Noah and Donna are not filing their taxes together.
Yeah,
they're not paying rent together. None of that. But then I remembered, I was like, he got in on the ground floor of Donna Martin Designs or Designs by Donna, whatever her stuff is called. I cannot get over how Gina, in what world would anybody stop and ask if Gina is okay before going to check on their girlfriend when they've been talking about their girlfriend and their girlfriend got held up at knife point or attacked it. A knife was pointed in her general direction.
A knife was present in the same place that Donna was present.
Yeah. But he does. He goes into the store and he's like, Donna, we cannot afford this. This is the busiest time of year for you. And we do find out in this episode that the store is not doing well, which is hilarious to me because that's a par for the course.
Right. Like, what business by the group is?
But he turns to Sonia and is like, Donna wouldn't do this because she's too nice, but like, you have to see what you're doing to her store. I don't think you should stay here.
Yeah.
Which he doesn't fire her, at least.
No.
And Donna's not happy about this.
Well, and I guess it makes sense because, like, she's trying to do this out of goodwill. She's trying to help this girl, and it's like nobody's giving her a chance. And she keeps bringing up that point where she's like, you know, why? So I can be another person who, you know, doesn't give her a break or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And we get a quick scene at the beach apartment that night. Kelly and Dylan have gotten back late. They start kissing, and the phone rings. And I think it's, like, very slightly off timing. I think Kelly should not have stopped kissing Dylan until Matt said something, but I'm pretty sure she stops kissing him and goes to get the phone before Matt says anything.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, she's on the phone with Matt. She's lying to him, or it's a lie of omission. She's not being clear about what she did. She says she went Christmas shopping with someone, but she's just a little tired, you know, completely ignoring the fact that she sounds out of breath because she's been making out with somebody else and he's actively kissing her neck while she's on the phone with the other guy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But after she hangs up the phone, she's like, I want to be with Matt. I really want to be with Matt, so I'm not doing this.
And it's just so wishy-washy. And I think, again, human nature to not know what you want. But the fact that she declares it to Dylan and yet she's still there with him, it's like still no wonder these boys are like, okay, these are mixed signals, but make up your mind.
Exactly. Like, you can't go to Mexico, spend an entire day with Dylan, and then at the very end of it all say you want to be with Matt. That's not fair to anybody.
Yeah, and like, obviously while she was on the phone with Matt, Dylan takes the drugs out of the statue or whatever. But then the next day, Kelly goes back into the store and Gina basically like ribs her for being gone so long. Kelly's like, okay, well, what can I do? I'm here now. And she's like, oh, well, we've been doing shifts. And Kelly's just like, okay, I'll go home then.
Yeah, I was just like, girl, this store was your idea. And if it's not doing well, you need to step in.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, like, Matt shows up and Gina brings up Mexico right in front of Matt, even though, like, she knows he's there, but she claims, like, she was turned around so she didn't know Matt was there. And I guess, like, to Kelly's credit, because she was caught, she doesn't lie. She's like, yeah, I went to Mexico. I was gone with Dylan, la, 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 la. But, like, she can't be surprised when Matt gets mad and leaves.
Mm-hmm. Which, I think this was the most Val that Gina has been.
Yes.
Where she does this. Because Val would have found some other way to mention, like, the private jet or being gone literally all day.
True.
She sees Matt walking up and just, like, times it perfectly of, like, you did something to me, so I'm going to do something back to you.
Exactly.
And to go back to the dance marathon, Janet tells Steve, she's like, just pull the pledge. It, like, we're going to look bad, but it's going to be better than losing $12,000 we don't have. Mm-hmm. Steve, on the other hand, says, I can't be embarrassed, but instead I'm going to go scheming and throw a bunch of other people under the bus. And he literally makes a comment about, like, inviting fat people to dance because presumably they can't. Like,
just such a Steve remark. Such a Steve remark.
And so, not having seen Muntz in a while, surprise, he called Muntz and his wife, thinking that Muntz would just absolutely fail at this. However, Muntz and his wife set some goals, and they have been keeping them.
Muntz says he has lost 30 pounds, and they have literally been training and all that. And so, yeah, like, now Steve's plan is foiled, thank God, because Muntz and his wife are very much prepared to go the distance.
I know. They were like, 12 hours of dancing? That's a piece of cake. And then Muntz literally picks up a piece of cake and starts eating it.
It was great.
I love him. I was so happy he came back.
Right?
So then we go see Gina. I guess this is her, like, two-hour break. And she's over at David's house looking for David. It is lunchtime. David's gone out to pick up food, and Dylan is drinking. Has no job, just sits at home drinking all day. Nobody is concerned. It's fine. But they get, like, real up close and personal. Jeannie keeps commenting about how Dylan doesn't blink, and she starts hinting at wanting to invite him to be her dance partner. But he's like, girl, I literally heard you earlier. I know you said David. I know you're here for David. Stop
it's
it.
It's just, he's also high. And so,
oh, so high.
His behavior was so funny. He doesn't blink. I clocked it. He doesn't blink at her one time. And God, Gina is just so desperate. She just wants the bad boy. And when David comes back with Chinese food and he's like, hey, they're out of mushu pork, so I got some other stuff. And Dylan's just like, oh, man, I was really hoping for that mushu pork.
I just loved him because then he's like, oh, yeah, Gina's here to talk to you. Just pretend I'm not here. And then immediately is just like, actually, Gina was looking for a date and she was hoping you might do it. Like, he can't so keep funny. Out of it.
I know. It's just, I love Dylan. Just, this is why I'm like, all right, people should be concerned. However, I am not.
Yeah, I don't know why in this moment I have decided, maybe because he looks like he's 35. I'm like, he's an adult. Yeah. He can make his own decisions. If he wants to get high on heroin and drink a beer at noon, who am I to say?
Exactly. Exactly.
We go back to now wear this. And Noah comes to apologize. He's like, hey, I'm not sure I should have stepped in with Sonia. I'm not sure I should have acted that way. I feel like I've been neglecting you, Donna. But at this point, Sonia runs in, and apparently that guy that she was with, she wanted him to get her pregnant because I guess getting pregnant in 15 means you get kicked out of the gang. I'm not really sure, but he got somebody else in the gang pregnant, and so she's very upset.
Yeah, she was like, he was my one ticket out of the gang. Okay.
Yeah, but like, one ticket out of the game by getting pregnant at 15, and nobody's right. concerned about this. Donna's not like, girl, let's get you some birth control. Let's have mm-hmm. a conversation. Mm-hmm. Also, she was having sex in this store while Stuart's patrolling. Like,
yeah, so many things.
The whole place
wrong.
Is glass. This is gross. Yeah,
exactly.
Which, you know, speaking of Stuart, he steps over. He's like, hey, is everything okay? Donna says it's okay, but Stuart doesn't leave until Noah says it's okay. Noah says that Donna says it's okay.
Right.
And Donna invites Sonia to come back to work. She's like, go calm down, have a cup of coffee, and then come back in and work a shift. Like, I'll do what I can for you.
Yeah.
Then we go to the Peach Pit. And Kelly finds Matt and tells him that Dylan took her by surprise. She thought she was just going to breakfast. And Matt's like, oh, and you just accidentally got on the plane?
Right. Like, her apology is, like, flimsy at best, just because she was so happy. She was so excited to go. Like, there's nothing really that she could have said that would have made Matt fine. But then Matt is honest. He's like, look, I can't play your backup. I can't compete with trust funds. You know, I can't even compete with Mexico. I like Tommy's Tacos or whatever it ends up being. and their 99-cent burritos suit me just fine.
And the only thing I don't like here is that he snaps at the Peach Pit employee. He's like, oh, yeah. Can I get that coffee to go? But then he's like, still waiting on that coffee. I'm sorry. It's been 30 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like, he's clearly mad and he doesn't want to show Kelly that he's mad at her. So he like takes it out on the employee. But like Dylan shows up and I guess, you know, Kelly and Matt walk away and Gene is there and Dylan says he's moved on from Kelly. You know, Gina's like, okay, good job spin doctoring that. And then he just asks her to go to dinner. And there's this whole, like, power dynamic here where he asks her to go to dinner. She says she works till 9, so he's like, good, I'll pick you up at 8. I'm like, Dylan.
And then he's like, yeah, let's get dinner. And she goes, I already ate. And he goes, then you can watch me eat.
Right? Like, what, Dylan?
But she tries to get back to him. She's like, oh, well, you know, I don't have any food in mind, but I really like to fly. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I do too. Which he means drugs. She means being whisked away.
Exactly.
And he does. He takes her to Mexico. Apparently they partied all night. This time she muled the drugs in the exact same fertility statue. But when they get back, he takes her straight to work because she's like, oh, my God, I'm late to work. This is going to look so bad again. She's just working here as, like, favors left and right. Kelly should be working.
Yeah.
But it turns out that the store got ransacked, and there was no forced entry. All three, Kelly, Donna, and Gina, all have their keys. But this is when Gina is like, I'm actually not sure I locked up. I mean, I closed last night, but I closed early. I closed around 8. And Kelly is so pissed, and she has no leg to stand on.
No.
Not a single one.
Not at all, but she's like, 8, you're supposed to be here till 9.
And just that we close at 9.
Yeah, like during the busy season or like whatever. And then I guess this is when we find out, like, yeah, here's the same fertility statue. And it's so funny because Gina's like, does it bother you that he just rinsed and repeated what he did with me? And she's like, no, actually, like, and says some quip to come back at her. But I'm just like, Kelly should see what Gina is at this point. Like, she should see exactly this behavior.
I'm telling, the whole time in this episode, I was like, Kelly should be having some Val flashbacks, but like, mm-hmm. kind of like a like scratch in, or an itch in the back of your brain where like, it exactly. is not to the level of Val, but when she immediately blows up her spot with Matt and then goes after Dylan, I think that's like the beginning of what happened with Val. Vil went straight for Dylan.
Well, and to that point, like, she should almost feel deja vu. Just, like you said, like a little itch in the back of her brain. Like, wait a minute, this seems oddly familiar, right?
Mm-hmm. But Gina changes the subject, and she's like, hey, guys, there's another set of keys, and we know who has them. I'm like, how did this not get brought up before? How have we not acknowledged that the 15-year-old that's working here for 2 weeks has a set of keys?
Right.
But the detective who's there now knows that Gina was the one who closed. Dylan comes in and says, I was with her. I know she locked up. And so they both have to go down to the station and give a statement and look at some mugshots. And Dylan is forced to leave without the fertility statue. I don't know why he can't just take it.
Yeah. Or like why he didn't do this earlier, you know?
Yeah. I'm sure Gina had to pee at some point and he had to hold her stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We stay on Kelly. She tells Matt that nothing happened in Mexico, that there won't be a next time with Dylan, and she wants to start seeing him again. And thankfully, for at least 5 seconds, Matt stands his ground and is like, I'm not competing. I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm. But I guess they're okay now.
Yeah. She said he doesn't have to and go to the dance with me. And we're all 15 going to a dance.
Yeah. And speaking of, we get to the pee pad. It's marathon time. Noah, again, is checking in with Gina to make sure everything's taken care of. And it was at this moment where I was like, I don't believe a single second of this. Like, I don't believe Gina has done anything for this party. But it doesn't matter. We don't know this at this point. David gets up and starts emceeing the event. And the musical guest is the Brian Setzer Orchestra. And I absolutely wrote Seltzer.
Oh, the Seltzer Orchestra. That would be fun.
Yeah. Right?
what's not fun is that Steve still wants the Munzes to take a dive, but mm-hmm. rather than just come clean to literally anyone about what he's doing, he would rather manipulate them.
Right?
But, like, Munz and his wife are so cute. I'm in love with them. I think they probably have just such a good marriage. The fact that they're willing to wake up together to go to 6 a.m. training.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love John more than life itself. There have definitely been times where we're supposed to be up and out the door to, like, go run a race or something. And he's like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. We have a literal gym downstairs and I still can't get Nate to work out with me. So.
Oh my God. That's just my dream, is just to, like, stand next to each other just doing our bicep curls.
Right. Yeah, I can't get Nate to do it. He's like, there's not enough room. I'm like, what are you trying to do in here? Like,
he's trying to be an ice skater like Gina.
I guess so. But yeah, it's like Steve goes so far as to, like, poison their drinks. And by poison, I mean literally just, like, overserve their drinks mm-hmm. to get them to, like, I guess, drop out. And Munz just downs the Mai Tai, has zero reaction, and then just says, can I have another one? And Steve is, like, all giddy, like, yes, you can absolutely have another.
Mm-hmm. Why is he surprised? He knows Munz has a good alcohol tolerance.
Right?
Like, was he not, like, in, like, a tequila drinking hat or something at one point?
He's the one that invented the, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a landscaper kit.
The water gun full of shots.
Yeah.
Or, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like an exterminator's thingy.
Yeah, like a Roundup sprayer thing, but sprayed margarita.
Yeah. I will say, though, that, you know, we did dry January, and the other day we had an event at work, so I had one glass of wine because the event was also at 4, and then we had a meeting at 5, but you're not going to make me go play Two Truths and a Lie in the office without alcohol.
Right.
And I had one glass of wine, and I came home like 3 hours later, and John was like, are you drunk? I was like, no, it's just been 30 days since I had a drink.
Yeah, seriously.
But, you know, kind of going off that, Dylan has not had heroin for a day, I guess. So he's starting to get real sweaty. He's starting to get real panicky about getting his drugs. And so he's standing outside, now wear this, staring at the statue. And the detective is in there. He's in there with Stuart. And so he's just like, I can't go in and get it. But I don't know how that's possible, right?
Like, yeah.
Both the detective and Stuart know Dylan. They just talked to him all day about this crime. So Dylan could come in and be like, Gina left this here. I'm picking it up for her. This is outside of the realm of the investigation because it wasn't here. Let me just take it.
Yeah, exactly. And literally, too, like, you know, after we see the whole Mai Tai situation, we go back to the store for just a short, short scene where Stuart is, like, locking up. But it looks like he kind of only does the top lock. So I'm like,
that's what I thought.
Yeah, it didn't seem like a very firm lockup. So I'm like, Dylan could easily just sneak in and go get this. I keep wanting to call it, it's the fertility vase of the Undabella tribe from Mean Girls.
Does that mean nothing to you?
No.
But truly, I thought Dylan was going to break in. I thought he was going to find a way to get the keys and just go in himself. Mm-hmm. And that, like, this was going to continue to cause problems with this break-in.
Yeah.
Which Donna is upset about. She is, you know, at the dance marathon with Noah, and she is just torn up. She's like, I gave the police Sonia's name and address. This could really blow up for her and cause a lot of problems, and I'm not even confident that she's at all involved. Right. And Noah immediately pulls her aside to talk, which, like, I gotta say, what a turnaround for this guy. It's like he wasn't an alcoholic 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I know. It's like we have our normal alcoholic or normal drug user back. We can't have two. You know, two guys.
Like, Donna starts mentioning all this stuff she's stressed about. She says that her store isn't doing well, which at this point in my notes I wrote, stop giving everyone jobs then, you dingbat.
Like, right?
You can't pay them if you're not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
But Noah says he's not too busy for her. Like,
yeah.
He has just immediately dropped everything, and she's really struggling to get the words out that they haven't talked about her birthday and that he didn't mm-hmm. do anything. And she's like, look, it's fine that you forgot. And he's like, let's go to the peach pit. It's quiet over there. We'll talk. Also, kind of weird to me that they can just go to the peach pit when it's like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right?
Or no, it's midnight. He said the surprise party was 11:55.
Mm-hmm.
But there technically is a surprise party there waiting for her. It is six people and a cake she can't eat, but it's there.
Oh my God. When she like her face when she sees the cake and then tries to still be excited because she can like blow out the candles or whatever. It was like such a Donna move to not get mad about a cake, you know?
Yeah. Which, okay. Not that we've ever seen her eat chocolate before, I don't think, mm-hmm. but have we ever acknowledged that she has a massive allergy like that?
I don't think so. I didn't know.
Yeah, I made either. A note to look that up and then I didn't do it.
Same. I made a note to talk about it, but then I got distracted because Donna's butterfly clips mm-hmm. were so on point.
Right. I stopped writing about the scene with Noah and like had to go back. I was like, hold on a second. Let me talk about these butterfly clips because I love them so much.
Right. Like, I don't think I'm being hyperbolic when I say I would buy myself butterfly clips and try desperately to bring that fad back right now.
Yeah.
They were like the ones that I think had like the bouncy wings too, yeah. like on spring. Mm-hmm. So, oh my God, I loved those. I had one that I wore like in 1999 constantly.
She just looked so adorable.
I know. She always does.
And she does. This is why she owns a boutique, even if it's failing.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as she blows out the candles, Noah pulls Gina aside into, like, the walk-in or something and is like, I gotta be honest, I expected more. I'm not mad, but I am disappointed that you didn't know that your cousin is allergic to chocolate and now she can't eat her cake.
And then Gina just has, like, the worst reaction. She just explodes. She's like, what? What? Because Donna gets everything she ever wants? Why is it always Donna, 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 Donna? And I'm like, literally, this is the Marsha, Marsha, Marsha from the Brady Bunch.
But, like, literally, you're at her birthday party, and it's literally her birthday, and you're literally living in her house and working at her store rather than do anything for yourself. So can you really complain that you're getting all these things from her?
Yeah, exactly.
But Donna overhears, and Noah does not try and stop Gina. He lets her dig her own grave, and then she turns around, sees Donna, and Donna's like, I had no idea you hated me so much. And Gina tries to turn it into a pity party by saying, well, no one threw me a birthday party ever, ever, ever. Because you're a brat and you cut everybody yeah, out.
Exactly. Like, it baffles me that it took this long for Donna to see Gina's kind of typical behavior, but it still took Gina just absolutely exploding. Like, she didn't mm-hmm. pick up anything until now, and it's still something that where she had to spell it out.
And I really get the feeling that it's honestly not going to make a bunch of a difference. Like, mm-hmm. now it's going to be Donna standing up for Gina in the friend group instead of Brandon standing up for Val, even though they should not.
Yeah.
But Dylan finally shows up at the pee pad. Worth noting, he did not come to Donna's party.
Mm-hmm.
He's all sweaty. He looks terrible. He basically demands that Kelly take him to the store. Yeah. And Kelly's fighting with him, but all Matt can see, because he's come into the pee pad with her, is that she's talking to Dylan and not at him. Right. So Matt gets a new partner.
Yep. He just decides to dance with somebody else. And I gotta admit, for them saying he's not a good dancer, he was breaking out some moves.
That's what I said. I was like, no one who's a bad dancer has the confidence to do what he did.
Yep, exactly. He was like doing that thing where he's like bouncing on his like feet while he's bending down. I don't know what that move is, but it was like, what is this, Matt?
Also, number three reason I like Matt is he looks really cute in suspenders.
Yeah. Yes.
They honestly, these guys can dress in 1950s wear. They were pulling it off.
They really were.
So Kelly now doesn't have a date. She's also turned Dylan down. So Dylan has to go find somebody else. Thankfully, Gina feels like shit for what she did, so she's getting drunk at the bar, and Dylan can take advantage of that.
Dylan says he lost his wings but has a plan to get them back, and basically it just involves Gina and the sculpture, and that's it.
I know. She's like, why do you need the sculpture? And he's like, for luck. And she's like, okay, yeah. Once you get it, what are you going to do? And he's like, I don't know. Let's go find out.
Exactly. And, like, she's a little sus, but then, of course, she goes with him because, again, she is desperate.
Mm-hmm. But so they leave. We don't see them again for a while. Mm-hmm. And we stay on the dance marathon because it's getting to be the early morning. The months are still going strong. Matt's still with his other partner. And then we find out that the winners of the competition are Arnold Muntz, never had that first name before, yep, and his wife.
And thank goodness that this wasn't a situation where, like, Muntz and his wife dropped out at any reason, because, like, that would be another – granted, I know we're going to get to the end of the episode and it still works out for Steve, because of course it does, but at least it wasn't because of this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then they donate their winnings to Fight LA for the AIDS benefit that they're dancing for. Mm-hmm. I'm obsessed with them. They're amazing. Muntz had the growth that Steve should have had.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Exactly.
Like, not that Muntz was bad before. All we ever saw him was, like, he was a gross frat boy who drank too much. But, right, like,
exactly.
He graduated college, got married, and started getting serious about taking care of himself. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Steve is... this has completely backfired on him. He can't even be happy for his friend until finally Janet sits down and is like, I hate to admit, but what you did worked.
Yep.
She says the other sponsors basically think that Steve is Kris Kringle and they spent twice as much as they normally do on ad sales. So business is saved. Why these people have that much budget left on, right, Christmas Eve?
Well, that's the thing is, like, I mean – I'm in advertising, so I understand, like, the need to spend the rest of your budget if you have it. But typically, like, you do that at the start of December, not on Christmas. Because usually, yeah, like, most advertising companies, like, whether they're agencies or just, you know, something like, they take the last 2 weeks off. So this is not normal.
Yeah, everybody plans for that. Like, I'm in accounting. Accounting never sleeps. But, like, people, mm-hmm, don't bring us new projects in the last 2 weeks of the year.
Right. Exactly.
Because they don't want to work either.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, Steve has been a trash human. It just happens to work out for him. And then he gets all happy and giddy with Janet when it's worked out. And I guess she's forgiven him because he lucked his way into it.
Right. Exactly.
Which, I gotta be honest, now that I think about it, it's probably kind of intoxicating to see this guy just constantly fail upwards.
I guess. Like, I could see where it's like, if you don't know him that well, it could be part of the charm. But he just never learns. So
that's the thing. Janet deserves better than that. She, mm-hmm, deserves him failing upward at, like, a mountain scale instead of just, yeah, up and down and up and down.
Exactly.
So it's the end of the dance marathon. Everything's starting to wrap up. Donna finds out that somebody's waiting outside for her, and it's Sonia. And she says that the rest of the gang played kickball with her face.
Yikes.
It's not good. I mean, the makeup is not amazing, but it is, mm-hmm, made pretty painfully clear that she got the bejesus kicked out of her because, yeah, the gang wanted her keys so that they could break into the store, and she wouldn't give them.
And she reveals, like, Stuart, the security guard, was actually the one who came in and robbed the store. And I don't think we're going to see anything come from that, like, to be honest with, no, you, since this happened at the very end of this episode. Because the more important thing is that Sonia also says she's out of the gang, but she's cool with that.
I know. She's like, I got kicked out thanks to you.
Yeah. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. And then Donna hugs her, and I feel like she should have been like, not my face.
Mm-hmm.
But Kelly has kind of made up with Matt. She finally got his attention and is like, I want you to take me somewhere. She wants to go to that Tommy's Tacos stand or whatever. And they try and have a whole moment where she's like, oh, this is perfect. It's like, you know me. And he's like, yeah, almost like. just been sitting here stalking you for the last 3 weeks.
But to be honest, like, Tommy's Tacos sounds pretty great. So I would also want to do that.
Truly, nothing would make me happier than a taco stand with some authentic tacos. Like, I cannot wait to come back to Georgia and just go all through Doraville, just down the highway, down Buford Highway, just everything.
Ugh. And then we have to go to David's house where Gina and Dylan are just making out in bed. And I still cannot get over how desperate Gina is because she just is like chasing him and like giddy about him and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, man, like, what is it that attracts you to him? Like, I don't get it. I don't get you. But and not to say that Dylan's not attractive and can't be attractive just by existing, because he surely does that. But it's like, I don't understand Gina's game or type or whatever. I know she goes for bad boys, but it also just looks like she goes for attention.
And I think that's exactly what it is in this case, is that Dylan is paying attention to her and it's not somebody that Donna has had before.
Right.
But again, this is kind of a repeat of a pattern where Val was just interested in the attention that Dylan could give her. And so that was the whole point of their relationship. But again, I gotta say, it's really weird that Dylan is in bed with a woman that he had just started hanging out with and he's putting a fertility statue right there.
True. And she doesn't think it's weird. Like,
right? No, I would be like, can we put that away where it's not gonna affect me?
Yeah, or like cover it or something. It makes me think of like the beginnings of a Buffy episode where it's like a haunted one or like a demonized fertility statue or whatever. And like,
it's
like, you know, the eyes turn red or something.
It's literally, I think, season 3 of Buffy when she comes back from LA and then her mom's got the mask and it's haunted and it starts the whole party. It raises the dead and you've got Giles. Look at my mask. Isn't it pretty?
Exactly.
Which truly, speaking of pretty, Dylan is looking good. I know, unexpectedly, like, considering, but
yeah, damn. He always does. I just, you know, it's the Gina situation that bothers me. And, you know, she's all fine and blissed out. And he just goes into the bathroom to do more drugs.
Which, if she's not noticing that he's coming out completely doped up.
Yeah.
Like, and you know she isn't. She's blissed out and having gotten him and not paying attention.
I feel like Gina doesn't really have any baseline for Dylan, though. So, like, all she's really interacted with him is when he's either under the influence of alcohol or other drugs. So,
true.
She might not catch on as quickly.
It just seemed like in the last scene when they're at David's with the whole, like, getting lunch and she comments on his not blinking, that she would have picked up on something.
Or, like, see, I was just going to say, when they're at the pee pad and he looks like crap and then now we're here and he at least doesn't look like that anymore. Like, he's dry. He's not clammy. But she's been drinking all night too. So, yeah, she's probably not noticing this and she's probably not thinking it's weird that he's going to come out acting all weird.
Yeah.
And we got to go back to the pee pad for the very last scene and – Donna is helping Noah clean up. I find it very hard to believe that there is not a cleaning staff helping with this. But I love that David is still there working. So it's just the three of them. David in his little glass DJ booth and then the other two. And Noah has some surprises for Donna. He makes it snow inside, even though they just cleaned up. They're going to have to vacuum again. And David starts playing Christmas music for them.
And Noah presents Donna with a really ugly bracelet.
Hideous. I think it's a charm bracelet. And I'm not a charm bracelet fan anyway. I swear multiple people have been given charm bracelets on this show already. So I know that the show likes them. But he very specifically points out, my dad gave this to my mom when they first got together. And she claims that she loves all of this. I think it's fine. I think it is on par for, like, a 24-year-old's birthday slash Christmas present.
Well, and but, given the whole, like, how Noah had been a shitty boyfriend for the last, you know, several episodes, this is a good step in the right direction for them. And if they're going to get us on board with them again to be in a positive relationship, like, this is a good way to do it, of Noah genuinely thinking about what Donna would like and stuff. So, you know, it just, it doesn't do it for me, but I understand how it would do it for Donna.
Can I ask why Noah has all of his family members' jewelry? Like, he's given her his grandma's stuff and now his mom's stuff. Why doesn't his mom have that?
True. Because it's just Noah. He has no brother. He has no dad. Everything went to Noah.
When Noah's dad died, so did Noah's mom and brother.
They just don't exist anymore.
Poof.
Yeah, exactly. They just, nothing traumatic, just poof, gone. And then it's so weird, though, because, like, David's it's all so smirky weird. And, like, he's talking in the radio booth. He's, like, talking about, I guess, the next segment or whatever. And he's like, well, even though it's 79 and sunny degrees here in Los Angeles, it's going to be a white Christmas. And I'm like,
yeah, he says, huh? From where I sit, it's going to be a white Christmas. I'm like, yeah. You have fake snow in front of you. Nobody else does.
Exactly.
David, everyone's going to think you're on cocaine.
Exactly.
It was weird to me that David is doing all of this and he's just like smirking in the DJ booth. I'm like, that is your ex-girlfriend so many times over. Yeah. It's weird to me personally.
Yeah. But that's how it ends.
Yeah. It's going to be a white Christmas, everybody. I think. I don't know. Yeah. I'm okay with Noah and Donna. It's just the whiplash that now Noah is, like, acting perfectly. I kind of want him to mess up a little bit again, but, like, not on a huge scale. Maybe just
– just to show, like, that he's still working on things.
Yeah. I just don't like how many times people hit the rock bottom and then it's, like, a full vertical straight back to top.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
They're just really fucking bouncy.
Honestly, they're 24. They can be.
They're weeble wobbles. They weeble and they wobble, but they don't fall down.
I wish that was me. I have one beer and my body battery goes down to two.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Man. So, do you have a quote of the week?
You know, I was thinking about that because I really didn't take that many. Like, my notes were only 3 pages long this time, which is on the shorter end. Usually I'm more like 3.5 to 4. So I think it was because of the musical guest, you know, and the fact that we actually got to hear them play and that sort of thing.
Twice, right?
Or three.
We got like 4 songs.
Yeah.
Cause they were just really trying to make it to fall break.
Yeah. Cause we got the jump jive. We got the dirty boogie. And I feel like we got another one and maybe a fourth because the mic was all weird. Like, it was the voice change. So, yeah, I was just looking back through and I wrote down some quotes, but I wouldn't call them like notable. Yeah, I don't think I have a quote.
Yeah, I'm looking back through as well. And all of my stuff is those little, like, you know, back and forths of we're going to breakfast on a jet. No, we're going to brunch. Respectable newspapers don't buy their stories. Of course not. That's why they're respectable. But same thing. Yeah. I don't call any of that worthy.
Yeah, same. So no.
Yeah.
Quote of the week.
I have one thing that I want to point out. Well, one quote and then one moment. So Janet and Steve are talking. Steve says he has a plan and Janet just goes, "The plan's horrible." Steve says, "You haven't heard it yet." And she goes, "That's why I have such a high opinion of it."
I mean, facts.
I love Janet.
He also petitioned to give her more than, you know, a minute and a half of screen time per episode. She is a regular. Yes.
And it's literally just to bolster Steve's story. It's not even to give her anything to do her own. We didn't see her talking to the sponsors. We didn't see her doing anything.
I'm still bothered by the fact that Gina and Matt both immediately got storylines for their own characters so that we can learn about them. And Janet still, we know nothing about her personally, except for her parents were hippies and so she's cool with free love. Like, that's all we know about her.
She didn't even get to eat her sandwich. Right. Noah ate it. Exactly. She didn't get anything. Ugh.
I'm just grumpy that Gina is so similar to Janet. Like, just the names. They're like too close. And it's just like Dylan, David, Donna. I mixed up their names like 20 times in my notes this week.
I had to relearn how to type Dylan so much. You know, like, for some reason, it's like the D-Y-L that throws me off every time.
Yeah. No, I kept typing Donna because the D just automatically flowed to Donna. And then I was like, nope, Kelly and Donna did not go buy fertility statues together.
The only other moment I wanted to call out, and this is just such a personal thing. I have been on this kick of watching police interrogation videos that have been analyzed by like counselors and psychologists and attorneys to point out like body language that indicates dishonesty and stuff. Ooh. So this moment where Dylan and Gina are in the peach pit talking, she asks him if he stares at everyone like that. Mm. He nods and says no. Yep. And so I was just like, immediately in my mind, I was like, we call this incongruent body language, which is an indicator of dishonesty.
I remember, like, I didn't write it down, but I remember clocking that. I'm like, I think Dylan just like did, it was just kind of almost like it felt like an understanding nod more than like a yes. It was just kind of mm-hmm. like, nope. I don't, you know, like it was so natural and fluid, but I was like, that's a lot.
Yeah. It just like popped out at me and I was like, yeah, that's all.
That's awesome.
I've just been super into figuring out like the body language of liars by watching police talk to criminals.
Man. Okay. That's fascinating.
Have y'all watched American Nightmare on Netflix?
Nope.
So it's one of the newer documentaries. It's the one that was called like the Gone Girl case right after Gone mm-hmm. Girl came out. But then it turned out that this woman didn't fake her own kidnapping and was actually kidnapped.
Oh,
but,
dang.
Like, yeah. So it's this whole wild story. Like, TLDR, kind of no spoilers as much as I can for the actual documentary, which is only 3 episodes. It's short. But the guy and his girlfriend are in their house, there's a home invasion, she gets taken, and the people that kidnap her tell the guy all this stuff. They like put headphones on him that give him the instructions of what they're going to do. They say, we're going to put cameras and put tape on the floor, and you cannot leave this square. If we see you leave the square, we're going to kill her. Jeez. All this stuff. And so then they drug him. He wakes up later. She's gone. She's been kidnapped. And he's in the square, and he's like, they told me not to call the police. I can't call the police. Mm-hmm. And then he finally does. So the police come. He tells them this whole story. They're like, why did you wait 12 hours to call? And he's like, well, first I was drugged. Then I just woke up. And then they told me not to call. So I was in this panic mode.
Yeah.
But then I hit this point where I was like, I have to call somebody. I need help. And they take him into a questioning room. They ask him all this stuff. He tells the same story. Like, he's, from what I understand, he's consistent in his story over and over again. But then the detective goes, I think you did it. And is basically just like, you can either tell us where she is now or we can find her later and you're going to look even worse. I'm trying to figure out how to make it so that you definitely did it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's this whole thing, but
I need to watch it.
I know. I feel like I need to too.
Like, so these videos that I've been watching, they also go into like interrogation tactics and different techniques that police use to get people to confess or to basically confirm whether or not they're telling the truth. And so they will confront you with like, they'll say they have evidence against you if they don't, but they'll say basically, yeah, whatever they need to do to trip you up and catch you in a lie.
Yeah, that was at one point he consents to taking a lie detector test, which I know is not admissible in court. He's volunteering mm-hmm. to do this thing to kind of stand up for himself. And they tell him, they have like some FBI guy come in, give him the lie detector test, and then immediately say, well, you failed. So why don't you just tell us where her body is?
Dang.
He did not fail. He told the truth. He was not the one that kidnapped her. And then when she shows up days later, they're just like, egg on our face.
Wow.
Well, shit.
That's crazy.
Also, the detective in that show is named Detective Mustard.
No, it's not.
Oh my gosh.
That's hilarious. Yeah, and
he's so bad at his job. So I spent the whole time being like, oh, Mustard.
That's my other favorite thing with those videos is they'll like point out when the interrogator is doing a good job. Yeah. And they'll also point out when they are just fucking terrible.
Wow. That'd be really interesting, like, to know. Like, that'd be good good feedback to have. I mean,
it's so interesting. Mm-hmm.
I bet to an extent that knowing all this stuff about body language could help you in real life. Like, not in a crime sense, but just in, like, talking to other people.
For sure.
But I don't know. As interesting as this sounds, I'm not sure I could watch interrogation videos. I watched those the documentary series Confession Tapes that came out on Netflix like years ago, where people were coerced into giving false confessions and then had to like get help to have them unwound, and it made me so uncomfortable.
Oh yeah. Anyway,
I feel like we could talk about that so much more than we could talk about the episode. Good. Well, I mean, we are done. So what's next week's episode?
All right. Next week is season 9, episode 11, How to Be the Jerk Women Love.
I mean, that's about Dylan.
Or Steve. Like, let's face it, they're just two different types of jerks.
That's fair. Oh, gosh. You know what that reminds me of? I don't know what it's called necessarily, but like the game, how you like, you know, neg women to make them want to be with you. And like,
yeah,
you're supposed to make yourself unavailable, or even on the women's side where it's like, you're not supposed to call them or answer their calls after so many days. And then you can't kiss them till the third date. Like,
yeah,
that's what that reminds me of.
Oh yeah, for sure. But we'll find out next week.
Oh my God. Sorry. I just had a completely recovered memory about how in high school I bought a dating book called Why Men Love Bitches.
That's amazing.
So until next week, you can follow us on Instagram at Back2Podcast.
You can also shoot us over an email if you'd like to with anything you want at back2podcast@gmail.com.
That's BACKTOpodcast@gmail.com.
And don't forget to go into your podcast app and rate, review, and subscribe. All that stuff really helps us get seen and build a community, and then we can give you all a better product. And if you give us a review in Apple Podcasts, we'll give you a shout out on the show because we really appreciate you. So until next week, from all of us at Back 2 Podcast, I really was looking forward to that mushu pork.
I have to go get pregnant so I can get out of a gang.
And I need a coffee and a 99-cent burrito. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.